This is Marking Out. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Follow on Twitter. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Marking out. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. Brennan likes this thing. Pro wrestling talk for pro wrestling fans. We marking out, y'all. We're marking out. Pro Wrestling Talk by Pro Wrestling Fans.
Welcome to Marking Out. Pro Wrestling Talk by Pro Wrestling Fans. This is episode 797. Thanks for listening. Check us out at markingout.com. Also, give us a like on Facebook. Buy a t-shirt, prowrestlingtees.com/markingout. Make sure that you are subscribed and downloading on Spotify and wherever else you're listening to the podcast. Give us a follow. At Marking Out on Twitter, at Marking Out on TikTok, at Marking Out 11 on Instagram. And also follow me, Dave the Rave, at DavidPTDPT. Follow Chris at CMSweeney85 on Instagram and Chris SweenDog on Twitter. And follow Brandon at BTTG161. Brandon, how are you?
I am doing awesome-ish, as always. A little bit sick, a little under the weather.
Well, that sucks. Hope you feel better.
But at least it's not strep, so...
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
You got that going for you.
But I am now finally taking a Z-Pack, so hopefully that works. Mm-hmm.
Well, hopefully that helps out a little bit.
But how was your week?
It was great. How about yours?
Well, because I got sick, I didn't really do anything for my birthday. Although I did go out for Mother's Day. That was a whole, like, ordeal. Mm-hmm. Did you go out for Mother's Day or do anything?
No.
So we attempted to go... Normally, every Sunday, I'm at the Cheesecake Factory. We attempted to go elsewhere, and we didn't realize, I guess, that... Or my mom didn't realize, not to put the blame on her, that you would maybe need reservations for Mother's Day, which... It was a pizza place. I would never in a million years think we would need reservations for that.
Mm-hmm.
So my brother tried another Italian place. Sorry, reservations only. We went to Cheesecake Factory. It was beyond packed. However, hold on. They were beyond packed. However, had to do nice. That. We were sat in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
That was beyond shocking. So I was able to get some free birthday freebies. I got my free slice of cheesecake from Cheesecake Factory. The banana one, if you're wondering.
How is it?
It's good. I've had it before, and I'm not like a big banana fan, but every once in a while I'll crave that. And, I think it's a really good slice of cheesecake. I am kind of surprised they don't have like a banana pudding slice on their menu.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that would work extremely well. But other than that, on my birthday, watched WWE Backlash. Wasn't there live in person in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah, so. Kicked off with Braun Breaker picking up a victory over Seth Rollins.
Quite interesting. Braun opener. Breaker tried to spear Seth right away, and Seth moved.
Yeah.
But it was like...
Yeah, you had your...
Honestly, it was like a nonstop attack from Seth Rollins at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
With a good amount of brawling in this match, which obviously completely fits that for this feud.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, outside of the beginning portion, this was a pretty even match.
Yeah, I agree.
Like
even back and forth, you know, you had Braun Breaker even going for the spear, and then you had the typical pedigree spot.
Yeah, and then he hit the stomp as well. Paul Heyman got up on the apron. Seth Rollins, when the referee was distracted... grabbed a chair to take out the vision. He was ready for Logan Paul. He was ready for Austin Theory. He got back in, ate a spear, and then again kicked out, countered another spear with the pedigree again. Went for the middle rope, the stomp from the middle rope. Braun Breaker speared him. And then speared him one more time and got the victory off of that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it was a big win for Braun Breaker there. Much needed.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Very big win for him to get that over Seth Rollins, especially because it's been this entire thing about Braun Breaker doing his thing and not really taking the advice of Paul Heyman and anybody around him. So Big win. Next up, yeah, Tyrique Williams picking the victory over Sami Zayn to retain his championship. Thank goodness.
Yeah, I didn't really have any doubts there. Even though, I mean, typically when somebody ends SmackDown, the show before, the go-home show, on top, you're losing. Tyrique Williams, if I'm not mistaken, hit a trick shot on Sami Zayn to end SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked in this match, Tyrique Williams, I don't know if we've had it before, he was doing those corner stomps, doing the whoop that trick, kind of like New Day Rocks, like the stomps.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was cool. Sami Zayn went to use the steel steps. Lil Yachty put a stop to that. I think he has been fitting into this program quite perfectly.
Yeah.
When he first showed up, everyone's like, how dare they? We don't need Lil Yachty. I think he has been perfect for pro wrestling.
He's been good.
Later on in the match, Sami Zayn faked a knee injury. I saw it coming. Lil Yachty was confusing in that moment, though. He got up on the apron. And
I agree. Sammy, that part, yeah.
Sami was able to use the candy cane kendo stick. But what I really liked from that spot is that Lil Yachty realized he messed up with that spot. I thought that was very well done. Obviously, I mean, it was 100% on purpose that they had both of those spots. But I really liked Lil Yachty realizing, like, oh, damn, I just messed up. And then when the referee was checking on Tyrique Williams, Lil Yachty hit Sami Zayn with the kendo stick. Sami ends up dropping him a bit after that. And Tyrique eventually hits the trick shot, gets the victory there.
Yeah, at first it was very confusing because it was like, it seemed like he was turning on Tyrique Williams by the way that he was disturbed.
I don't
The way that he was distracting the referee. The way that he was distracting the referee while that entire thing with allowing Sami Zayn to pick up the upper hand, it was definitely very confusing, but it was good to see him rectify it.
The next segment, man. We didn't know what it was going to be, who it was going to be. They aired a video for Danhausen and Mizkit and all the whole feud that's been going on. And they brought out the cloning machine. And it was a clone of Danhausen. It was not CM Punk. It was not Stephen A. Smith. It was not Jelly Roll. Jelly Roll would have made sense there. But it was a mini Housen. And I noticed while the match was going on that Masquerita Sagrada has the same exact boots, so I assumed that it was him. I just wasn't sure if it was El Torito, but then it was confirmed that it was, in fact, El Torito. I had no clue that he was the one that worked the World's Collide event last year. So I think that was pretty cool. I think El Torito is probably, right now, the top, like, the best mini wrestler out there. So it was really cool to see him in this, and he worked one hell of a match with Miz and Kit Wilson.
Yeah, this one match was very entertaining.
So Danhausen, Minnehausen pick up the victory here. At one point, Kit Wilson forced Minnehausen into the machine again. And a bunch of clones show up. And, like, it was just, this is pro wrestling 101.
Yeah, at first he didn't know what to expect if somebody else was going to come out. Like, then that.
I was like, oh, maybe now we'll see CM Punk or something. But then, I mean.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
You're cloning
a mini.
But it was
just a bunch of clones of.
Yeah. It made perfect sense there. Kit Wilson at one point used a mirror while Minnehausen was doing a curse. So he ends up cursing himself. I thought that was a great spot. The skull crushing finale from Miz, I thought was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Miz ends up still being cursed. He tries to use the fire extinguisher, ends up using it on himself, ends up hitting Kit Wilson with it. From there, Danhausen was able to hit that pump kick and get the victory there. But this, I was very, very entertained by this entire segment.
I agree with you. I thought it was very entertaining and just a lot of fun. Next up, you had Io Sky pick with the victory over Asuka. This was probably, for me, was the match of the night.
I put this down for match of the year.
Nice.
We did have We Want Kairi chance during this match.
Yeah, the good thing is that every time that chant broke out, they kind of changed. They did something big to distract the crowd and get the chant to stop right away, which was really good.
I think a lot of people assumed that they would deliver on this match. They absolutely 100% delivered on it. I thought something I need to make note of. Io in this match, she hit the bullet train attack, and then instead of going for the over the moonsault, she just pinned Asuka, and I don't know if she normally does that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting. I liked Io reversing the Asuka lock and then locking Asuka in the Asuka lock herself. At one point, we saw Asuka get Io on the commentary table. She goes to mist Io. Io picked up, I think it was Wade Barrett's notes and blocked it.
Computer.
I think it was just it was notes.
The laptop.
I'm pretty sure it was a pad. I don't think it was a computer.
Yeah, I think it was the laptop.
I think it was a notepad, brother.
Nay, it was a good spot, though.
And then later on, we saw Io, I think, actually hit the bullet train. Hits the moonsalt.
Yeah,
or no,
she did.
Before that, though, we had that segment where Io went for the moonsault again, and Asuka grabbed her for an armbar. And then that got turned into an Asuka lock, and then she passed out but turned over into a pin, so Asuka broke that up, and I thought that was a very well-done spot. But then Io hit the bullet train, hits the moonsault, gets the victory there. I thought this was great. And then Asuka and Io, yeah. they cried, they hugged afterwards. Part
Which
of me
made
thought
a lot
we
of speculation.
Were going to see... Yeah, I mean, we don't know what the actual truth is with Asuka. Apparently, she is still under contract, and she's unfortunately dealing with a family issue in Japan, so...
Yeah, we don't know what really is happening, but it seemed like it made you question, it seemed like it was retirement, even though nothing was announced with it. It seemed like it was her taking a break, but nobody really knows for sure. You had everybody on the roster putting out tweets or Instagram stuff or stories featuring Asuka paying their respects. So we don't really know, and that's okay.
But in that moment after the match, I thought for a split second that maybe we're going to see Asuka attack Io and then we would get Kairi. So I was still holding on for Kairi, but that didn't happen. I did see Asuka and Io posted a picture from backstage where they did have Kairi's mask. I assume maybe it was supposed to be a mask that she would have worn at WrestleMania, perhaps. I don't know, but I was very much so happy with that match.
Yeah.
After that, we had John Cena come out. Everyone thought this was going to be a Club WWE segment. John Cena built this up to be completely groundbreaking. And he spoke about his final match and getting to see the future on that Saturday night's main event card. And he announced that WWE will do it again with the John Cena Classic. It's the best of today versus the best of tomorrow. And then fans will vote for the champion. It doesn't matter if they lose their match. It's just the fans, whoever they want, will pick the champion. And I don't understand how people are finding this concept so hard to grasp. It's about putting
seems like
over...
It should be entertaining.
It's about putting over the future, big time. People think the only way for someone to get over and be over is to win matches. That's one way, but there are so many ways to go about that.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, well, guess it guarantees that a heel won't win. We've seen heels cheered before.
Yeah, anything could happen in a match.
Well, how are they going to do this? They could just end up trolling. Well, anybody in the tournament, or not tournament, the John Cena Classic, I assume is someone who deserves to be in the John Cena Classic. I don't think there's going to be a troll sort of person in there.
Yeah. It's pretty much straightforward.
But nobody got over from that Saturday night's main event. Then you didn't watch Saturday night's main event.
Yeah, I mean, getting there's so many different
in the ring with the future, with the present.
Yeah, there's so many different examples of stuff like this happening where the loser of the matchup still went over. Look at Cedric Alexander. He lost his matchup, but yet the crowd cheered so hard after their Continental Classic or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It led to Triple H going out and raising his hand, even though he wasn't the winner.
And signing him. Triple H exactly. did the same thing. He didn't do it out in front of the crowd. He did the same thing with Mia Yim with the Mae Young Classic. He caught up to her in the back or outside or whatever, and he goes, you know, they were chanting higher Mia or something like that. And he goes, okay. And offered her a contract. So she didn't win, but she won.
Yeah.
And she's still in WWE today.
Yeah. Main event of the evening, Roman Reigns picked up the victory over Jacob Fatu to retain his championship.
I think, again, Michael Cole did a very good job at very much so hyping up that Tongan death grip. And overall, this match I thought was really well done. Fatu looked like main event material. He looked like he could be a champion in WWE there.
Yeah, I'm agreed.
I feel like they spent a lot of time outside of the ring here. Could have done with a little bit of less of that. They had Fatu put Roman Reigns through the commentary table. Fans, obviously, they were eating it up there. I didn't necessarily need that. But he got Roman back into the ring. Roman speared him. Went for another spear, and Jacob Fatu hit that pop-up Samoan. Hit the moonsault. Roman Reigns kicked out of that. Jacob Fatu locked in the Tongan death grip, which Roman got out of. Hit a few Superman punches. Hit a spear. Jacob Fatu kicked out. And then that turnbuckle pad came off. Jacob Fatu flew into it. And basically from that spot, Roman Reigns won. But Jacob Fatu, after the match was over, beat the absolute heck out of Roman Reigns.
Oh, yeah, that was crazy.
He took out Sean Bennett, he took out officials, and then held up the championship.
Yeah, I was definitely surprised with the Sean Bennett takeout.
And obviously we know more that happened, so, I mean, we can move to Monday Night Raw. We'll put a pin in that. It opened with Monday Night Raw. I mean, it opened with Roman Reigns pulling up again without his championship. Adam Pearce, though, before they mentioned the title, said that after what happened at Backlash, he doesn't know if Jacob Fatu should be there. And then Roman asked him where his title is. Why is Adam Pearce holding Roman's title?
A thing where it's not expected that the champion travels with the championship anymore.
I don't know. That's very weird to me. But Roman said that Adam Pearce can't fire Jacob Fatu because he hasn't acknowledged him yet. And that was the deal of the match. And since he cleared Jacob Fatu to be in WWE, he will be the one to take out Jacob Fatu. So we'll put a pin there.
Meh.
After that, we had the Vision come out, and Paul Heyman spoke about Seth Rollins, obviously, and said that Rollins will never be ready to have a victory over them. And Austin Theory then spoke about the Street Profits, and he said Montez Ford's only back because Bianca Belair can't pay the bills anymore. I don't know how I like that line. I don't know how I feel about that line, I should say. But the Street Profits came out. They went back and forth. Montez, I think, stepped up big time on the mic here. And Joe Hendry came out, sang that song about Logan Paul, and it sets up into their match where we see the Street Profits and Joe Hendry pick up the victory of the Vision.
Nah, entertaining.
The Street Profits, I think, definitely needed the victory. And I didn't think that the Vision needed a loss here. Like, I felt like they shouldn't have lost. But Seth Rollins did show up. And he took out Bron Breakker behind the referee's backs. I saw some people say, right in front of the referee. If you go back and watch the spot, which I made sure to do, the referee's back is completely turned away. So Seth Rollins ends up helping the Street Profits and Joe Hendry get that victory there. And then after the match, he helped Angelo Dawkins up. Bron Breakker spears the heck out of Dawkins. Rollins could only be like, my bad.
Totally took him out.
He moved out of the way of Bron Breakker. So it is technically a my bad situation, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, I guess.
After that, we had Penta come out to call Ethan Page out. And Ethan Page showed up, trashed Penta for wearing a mask and hiding behind a mask. And said that since he pinned Penta last week, he should automatically be number one contender. And Page said that Penta is probably afraid to face him again. And Penta's like, brother, right here, right now, let's go. And Ethan Page is like, no. Saturday night's main event. And then Rusev showed up. And I was like, wait. This doesn't sit well with me that you're getting a title shot before I'm getting a title shot. And Ethan Page was like completely cowardly here. And he's like, oh, I already spoke to Adam Pearce. And Javon interrupted to trash you, Rusev. And then Javon came out and was like, brother.
I like this part where Page tried to talk over Rusev. And Rusev just quickly like told him to shut up.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, he was just cowardly backed away from that.
But Javon was like, you know, you're lying. You're making this all up. Ethan Page pushed Javon Evans into Rusev. This came to blows, and then we go into the actual match where Javon Evans picks up the victory over Rusev. I think it was definitely a clash of styles between the two of them. It worked. Mm-hmm. I think the ending, I don't know how to dissect the ending there, because Javon Evans eventually hits that OG cutter before pinning him. I don't know if he legitimately hurt his back or if he was just selling a hurt back before pinning Rusev.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I liked that there was a sell there, but I also think that it kind of hurt Rusev for being out even longer than the three count.
All right.
So I'm kind of torn on that, but Javon gets the victory there. I have to assume Saturday night's main event is not going to be Ethan Page versus Penta, and it'll end up being a fatal four-way.
Mm-hmm. That seems likely.
We had Brie Bella and Page come out, the tag team champions. They called out the Judgment Day. Roxanne brought up the moment that she met Brie Bella and Nikki on, I think it was Total Divas. It might have been Total Bellas. I'm almost certain that it was Total Divas, though. And I thought that inclusion and that line that she had there, I thought was great. And Raquel told them that they should just hand the titles over. It came to blows. Liv Morgan showed up to help out the Judgment Day. And the Judgment Day took control over that.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of people are pointing out, they think it's funny that Roxanne called Paige old, but Raquel is older than Paige.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But next up, you had Io Sky pick up the victory over Sol Ruka. I thought this was a solid match.
Earlier, though, we saw Asuka in the backstage hug Io. Mm-hmm. And said that she was looking for someone to take her spot, to take over for her. So we got that last moment of Asuka before. We don't know the next time we'll see her.
Yeah, I mean, next time we see her, it could be Royal Rumble time, you know? And no clue what exactly is happening. We don't know anything about it. We don't know if she could show up somewhere, anywhere. We don't know. There's nothing we don't know.
This match, though, I felt was a lot like the opening match, where neither person should be losing.
Okay.
And I feel like this was a bit slower than I was expecting. I don't know if it was like maybe jitters or something from Sol Ruka. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was a good match for Sol Ruka to be having against someone like Io Sky. The ending of this match was very interesting, I thought. Io took a long time up on the top rope to try to hit the over the moonsault. Sol Ruka is able to reverse it. She goes for the soul snatcher. Io, I thought this was going to be a complete botch, by the way. I was like, oh, no. Io ends up turning it into a pin to get the victory, and I'm really not sure if we've seen someone do that before.
I can't remember.
I thought that was such a good ending to that match.
Yeah.
And then backstage, Io told Sol Ruka that she's the future, and she leaves. Becky Lynch shows up, basically laughed at Sol Ruka for losing, so we are probably going to be getting Becky Lynch versus Sol Ruka soon.
Yeah, I think for sure. Next up, you had the Obafemi Open Challenge. That didn't actually go to plan because Pierce came out saying that nobody's stepping up to the plate to face Obafemi. So Obafemi, very angry, he went backstage and he beat the crap out of Los Garza.
I thought this sucked. So earlier in the night, we saw Los Garza show up and talk to Adam Pearce, say they're looking for opportunities. And then an hour went by and they showed Obafemi, and I was like, oh, they're probably going to be fed to Obafemi. And then Adam Pearce came out and said what he said. Oba, like you said, goes to the back. And I feel like Oba comes off more like a bully here in the segment rather than someone doing an open challenge.
I don't think he came off as a bully.
I think he looks like a giant heel in this, despite the fact that Los Garza are typically heels.
Yeah, Los Garza's heels anyways.
I feel like this made Oba look like a heel.
I don't think so.
Nobody's stepping up. That makes the locker room look like trash. Otis stepped up.
Well, that I do think.
Otis stepped up last week. Obviously, Akira Tozawa was about to, but then didn't. But nobody's stepping up, so I have to go to the back.
I don't know why they didn't have Tozawa step up this week.
I mean, I feel like that would be a bit backwards.
I think that would have been fine because he would have been trying to get one up for Otis now after he tried to step up last week. So why not just step up this week?
Yeah, I would have been fine with that overall, but at the same time, I feel like it would have been backwards to have him do that instead of Tozawa first and then Otis. But overall, like I said, I thought this was a bad segment, and I think that made Obafemi look bad. I didn't like that at all.
No.
Because
heel
thing.
Yeah. Next up, you had Dom pick up the victory over El Grande Americano Original to retain the AAA Mega Championship for the first time defended on Monday Night Raw. Backstage, Dirty Dom, he was just minding his own business with JD and then Balor taking out JD.
I thought that was funny. This, by the way, a lot of people were pointing out that the championship is the first championship to be defended in both WWE TV and AEW television.
Mm-hmm.
People like, they left out Kenny Omega from the video package. Well,
I wonder why.
Also, I am almost certain they aired that video package like last month or 2 months ago or some time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Prior. But I thought this was a very well-worked match. You had Los Americanos show up. Americano clocked Original. And Dom was able to take advantage there. But then Los Hermanos Americanos ran down. Original tried to unmask America. That Los Americanos took them out. Or maybe vice versa. I think maybe Los Hermanos Americanos. I don't remember which they disappeared. And Original tried to unmask Americano. Eats a 619. I thought that was a brilliant spot.
Very.
And then Dom wins with the frog splash. But I thought that was a great segment, great match. Great finish.
Agreed.
And then the end of Monday Night Raw saw Roman Reigns come out. Jey Uso tried to stop Jacob Fatu from going to the ring. He takes him out. Goes out there. Jimmy gets taken out. Fatu said that Roman is going to have to beat an acknowledgement out of him. And then Roman and Jacob Fatu brawled. Jacob Fatu used the Tongan death grip, eventually put Roman Reigns to the commentary table again. I think I mean, at this point, I think it's looking like we're going to be seeing Tribal Combat.
That's true.
Who shows up for Jacob Fatu? I don't know.
I don't think anybody has to or should. I mean, you have everybody talking about... what's his name? Zilla. But I don't think anybody should show up for Fatu right now.
It should be interesting to see how that match goes.
Yeah.
But that is Monday Night Raw. Moving over to NXT. It kicked off with Tatum Paxley and Lizzie Rain picking up the victory over Nikita Lyons and Zarya. I thought this was a good tag team match. Neither team should have been losing, but they needed a way out of that, so Zarya ends up leaving the match. Lizzie Rain hits Thunderstruck on Nikita Lyons, gets the victory. Tatum Paxley said that she wants to give Rain a title shot next week, so we're going to see that match. Naraku made his in-ring debut, picked up the victory over Lindsay Dorado, making his return to NXT television. There was a good show of dominance from Naraku. Obviously, Lindsay had some offense in there, but it was what it needed to be. You had an interview with Natty. She was talking about LFG. Jada Parker interrupted. Natty told her maybe she should join LFG. I thought that was a funny line. Jada Parker also called in to bust it open to interrupt Natalya. Natty this week, not Natalya. We saw Birthright pick up the victory over EK Prosper, Sean Legacy, and Tate Wilder. Dorian Van Dux spoke to the faces beforehand, had brass knuckles in his locker, so it seemed like maybe he would maybe be joining Birthright. That did not happen there yet. But this was a fun match. Birthright controlled a lot of this match. It broke down into the move, move, move gimmick. Legacy kept wanting to be tagged in, but Tate Wilder wouldn't tag out, kept going. He missed a moonsault. Birthright was able to win off that. Mason Rook came out to Mason Ryan's old theme song. Robert Stone at security for this contract signing. Rook wants more than just to be going viral. That's why he's in NXT. Tony D'Angelo came out and said that he's not making a name for himself off of him. Cam Hendricks attacked Tony, trying to make a name off of Tony. Rook hit a moonsault onto them, signed the contract. We're going to see where this leads to. After that, Jackson Drake picked up the victory over Noam Dar. I think Dar looked great in the ring. It was good to see him back. The Vanity Project got involved. Noam Dar took them out. Then Michael Lockwood grabbed Noam Dar in front of the referee, I think. And that basically led to the end of the match. Dark State came out afterwards. Whole commercial break. They're just standing there with the Vanity Project. They spoke about the tag team titles. Vanity Project was like, no shot. And Brad Baylor brought up Saquon and Dion being at one another's throats because of them. And Cutler said that they have a title shot next week, but it won't be him and Griffin. It'll be Sugars and Lennox to show that they're united. And then the Vanity Project tried to sneak attack them. They got put down. You saw in the main event, Kalani Jordan pick up the victory over Kendall Gray. This was an even match. This was a very, very good main event. Both of them absolutely killed it in this match. Backstage, Izzy Dame attacked Lola Vice. It spilled into the ringside area. Ren Sinclair, who was on crutches, ends up getting taken down. And that distracted Kendall Gray. Kalani got the win off of that. It sucks that that was the there wasn't a definitive winner because of that outside interference there. But man, this was such a good main event for NXT. And then Kendall was pissed, pushed Lola Vice afterwards. And then Izzy Dame took Lola Vice out with the big boot. So that is NXT moving over to SmackDown. It opened up with Trick Williams, Lil Yachty as well. This was a big hometown celebration for Trick Williams. Miz Kid interrupted. Lil Yachty made fun of them for being cursed. They're turned into slam poetry, freestyling. A match was set up. Trick Williams picked up the victory over The Miz. The match went much longer than I expected it to. I was surprised to see Miz even hit the skull-crushing finale, but Kit Wilson distracted the referee so Miz could go grab a kendo stick. Lil Yachty stopped him, used it on Kit Wilson. From there, basically, Trick Williams gets the victory, hits the trick shot. Later on, Danhausen was working on that cloning machine. There was a giant there. I don't know where that'll possibly lead. We had Brie Bella and Paige pick up the victory over Julia and Kiana James. I think it was cool to see Julia and Paige together in the ring. I wish the crowd was more into this match. But Julia was not happy with Kiana James losing. They argued backstage later on. And Tiffany Stratton was interviewed. She's basically not having anything to do with any of the teams. She's the U.S. champion. It's stupid that they even had her in this position. Chelsea tried to talk to Tiffany about being a team, and like I said, Tiffany wasn't having anything of it. You had Carmelo Hayes pick up the victory over Ricky Saints. I liked their backstage segment earlier, but this was a good match. They had a lot of nice back and forth. Saints tried to cheat using the ropes. Charles Robinson saw that. He ends up arguing with Charles Robinson, and with that distraction, Carmelo Hayes rolls him up. Uses the ropes. Uses what Ricky Saints was doing against him. You had Tama Tonga pick up the victory over Damian Priest. This was supposed to be a tag team match, but R-Truth wasn't cleared. Nakamura spoke to Tama Tonga before the match, and Tama Tonga took him out. I liked the match, but the bigger stuff was afterwards. Tama Tonga, Solo Sikoa took out Damian Priest. Yet Jade Cargill come out, and she said that she's taking the title from Rhea Ripley. Charlexa came out. I feel like this segment was kind of pointless because they acted like a match wasn't already advertised. But then you go and have Charlexa defeat B-Fab and Mia Yim via disqualification. I like the offense that B-Fab and Mia Yim got, and I think they should have won the match. But Jade Cargill got involved. That caused a disqualification, and then Flair had to stare down with Jade afterwards. So they have tag teams, but they're doing single stuff with them as well. And then you have single stars, you're doing tag team stuff with them. Backstage, Charlexa spoke. Charlotte said that she's been doing everything she possibly can to put aside her feelings, work with Rhea Ripley, question where she was. Alexa Bliss said she's going to go find out. That turned into a six-woman tag match for Saturday night's main event. You had Fatal Influence interviewed also, basically just putting everybody on notice. Earlier, you had Cody Rhodes come out. He set up a table, set up chairs for a contract signing. Gunther came out, told Cody that he wants him to address him nicely and just say please. And then Royce Keyes interrupted and said that if Gunther wasn't going to go sign the contract, he will. And he goes into the ring, goes to sign the contract. Gunther stops him. Aldis came out and said that all of this was real simple. Gunther hasn't signed, so now it's up for grabs. And he sets up Royce Keyes versus Gunther for the main event. And everyone, well, not everybody. I saw people were like, how dare Royce Keyes get a title shot opportunity like this? What did he earn? He didn't earn it, blah, blah, blah. Brother, it's spelled out perfectly. Nick Aldis said it's up for grabs. It does not matter if you are not a contender. It is up for grabs. Sometimes wrestling fans just really piss me off that they just, you're not watching the show. You're just pay attention to the show. In the main event, Gunther picked up the victory over Royce Keyes. Solo told Royce Keyes that he could help him become champion. And he also said that he would hate to see the same thing that happened to Shinsuke Nakamura happen to him. So I thought we would maybe see the MFT show up. I'll put a pin in that. I liked the power struggle in this match between Gunther and Royce Keyes. I liked Keyes slamming Gunther multiple times on the commentary table. I wish there was less outside the ring fighting. I think Gunther had busted Royce Keyes open with a lariat at one point. Gunther eventually locks him in a sleeper. Solo does show up, cheers on Royce Keyes, and Keyes gets out of the sleeper. I think that led to some good back and forth, like big man back and forth. Keyes got locked in the sleeper again. Solo fired him up again. And then the referee got knocked down. Solo slid a chair in the ring for Keyes to use on Gunther. And Royce Keyes threw the chair at Solo, knocking him off the ring apron. Gunther hits him, hits a lariat, powerbomb, gets the victory. And then while Gunther is talking trash to Cody Rhodes in the camera, Cody shows up from behind, hits the crossroad, closes SmackDown. And that was SmackDown. So I will take a quick little break, and I'll be right back here on Marking Out.
Yo, this is New Jack, and you listening to Marking Out.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Marking Out, episode 797. Moving back to AAA from last week. Kicked off, Lince Dorado picking up the victory over Octagon Jr. and Cruz Del Toro. This was a fun triple threat. Del Toro hit a coast-to-coast on Octagon and pinned him. Del Toro then moved off the pin because Lince was going for the shooting star press. Lince hits a brainbuster on Cruz Del Toro, gets the victory. We had a backstage segment. Dorian Roldan went to talk to Marisela Pena about the general manager role. And Chessman showed up to meet with her over that position. So that was awesome to see. We saw La Catalina pick up the victory over Jesse Jackson. Flammer came out to do commentary. We saw Jackson back in February, and I thought she was such a standout. So I was happy to see her back on AAA. I wish AAA would have more women's matches on every show, but they need a bigger roster, and I think Jackson would be great to use regularly for that. As far as this match goes, I think this was I think this was a decent first match for Catalina. It felt more like a showcase for Jesse Jackson, though. So that was weird. Apparently, they edited this heavily because it featured a lot more of Jesse Jackson getting offense. But the splash from Catalina at the end of the match, I think, was awesome. Las Toxicas showed up afterwards, jumped La Catalina. Lola Vice came out to make the save. She got jumped. And then Bayley made the ultimate save. That was awesome. So I have to assume we're going to be seeing a six-woman tag match between the six of them. There was a segment to end the show. Psycho Clown came out. He wanted answers for all these attacks on Los Psycho Circus. He called Pagano out. He pulled out Pagano's bandana and asked what's going on. Pagano asked Psycho Clown how he could believe he would do that after all they've been through. And he also said that he'd never turn his back on his own family. Psycho Clown pushed him and left. And then the War Raiders came out and attacked him. Pagano fought them off. It almost at this point looks like it has to be Pagano. Maybe it's not going to be. Who knows? Moving over to TNA Impact, Eric Young won a Battle Royal to become number one contender for the TNA Championship. You had Elijah, The System, The Righteous, Kazarian, Order 4, Hometown Man, Mr. Elegance, BDE. I marked the absolute heck out for Mustafa Saeed. He was the first one eliminated. But it was really cool to see him make this, I have to assume, one-off appearance for TNA here. But it came down to Elijah, Bear Bronson, Eddie Edwards, and Eric Young. Kazarian tried to eliminate Elijah, and the system ended up going after him. They end up getting out. Elijah and Eric Young fought on the apron. Young low blowed him. Elijah gets knocked off the apron there. Eric Young wins. Later on, Mike Santana came out and he spoke about Eric Young winning. Daria Ray interrupted. And she said that the next contender for the title is Steve Maclin. So he doesn't have to deal with Eric Young yet. Macklin's back next week. Santino also came out, announced that Indy Hartwell has re-signed with TNA, so I think that's awesome. And then he spoke about Stax corrupting Ariana Grace, and Santana cut both of them off and said it doesn't matter who he faces. The outcome is the same. He's winning. Lei Ying Li came out. She said that she's happy to bring the championship back to TNA. She thanked the fans, and then Xia Brookside interrupted. And she said she's coming for that title. Lee said that she'll beat her right there in the match, or have a match right there and then. Brookside walked like she was going to, then walked off as a typical heel thing to do. I thought both of them absolutely killed it in this segment. I thought this was a really good segment. Yet AJ Francis picked up the victory over Casey Navarro in a Sacktown street fight. Chris Carey, the great-grandson of Harry Carey, did commentary. He does play-by-play for the Oakland Athletics. He had a baseball bat with him for protection. AJ Francis took that to use. Navarro ducked it, sent him into the ring post, and then he put on a batter's helmet, used the baseball bat. I like that home run dropkick spot that he did that followed that. But AJ Francis eventually used the bat. He went to hit the down payment on Casey Navarro from the second rope onto a bunch of chairs. Casey Navarro turned that into a cutter onto the chairs. I thought that was a great spot. AJ Francis hit the down payment from the ring, threw a few tables on the outside, got him back in, gets the victory. Overall, good match, but TNA needs to maybe take a chill pill when it comes to these matches. Yet Rosemary and Allie pick up the victory over Victoria Crawford and Mila Moore. This was, there was a lot of chaos here. Tessa Blanchard tried to get involved. Mara Sade took her out. Rosemary hit her finisher, gets the victory. Allie obviously definitely needed a victory here, so I'm glad that she won. Main event, man. I was not expecting this at all. Cedric Alexander picked up the victory over Leon Slater to become the new X Division champion. Part of me wishes AJ Styles was ringside for this. Now, I mean, it really doesn't matter because the history wasn't made. But I like the history that commentary was pushing here. Slater got the first fall very, very, very early on in this match. Almost like out of nowhere. Later on, Cedric Alexander hit the lumbar check, ties it up. Even later on, goes for a Hurricane Rana from the top rope. Leon Slater holds on, hits a Styles Clash off the middle rope. I thought that was about to be the end of the match. Cedric kicked out. He tossed Leon Slater into the steps. He gloated with the championship. Slater was busted open from that. From the steps, not the gloating. But he kicked out of a brain buster. He kicked out of another lumbar check. He reversed Cedric, missed the Swanton 450, got hit with another lumbar check. Cedric hit two more, gets the victory. That was truly completely unexpected. I fully expected Leon Slater to make history. He tied Austin Aries' reign as the longest reigning X Division champion. If he won this match, he would have broken history. I was very confused by that ending. But I'm here for it, man. I'm here for Cedric Alexander. He's a fantastic talent. I think both of them killed it in this main event. And then the lights go out afterwards, and Fabian Aichner showed up. I think it's about time that he shows back up on television. I think Fabian Aichner is another very good talent. He didn't really get to showcase that much towards the end of his WWE career, which was very unfortunate. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Fabian Aichner does in TNA. So that is TNA. Hey, Brandon, got any shout-outs?
Damn it, Bobby. How many times do I have to tell you to listen to Brandon's shout-outs?
Lord of the Flies gets the first shout-out. Did you read the book? I feel like you had to have.
I don't remember, but I actually did watch this.
You watched this miniseries on Netflix?
I did.
What? So it originally aired on the BBC or some sort of BBC network in February, but it's brand new on Netflix here. I think the book is really good. Why did you end up watching it?
Well, I mean, I'm familiar with it, and also I needed something to watch, and I figured, why not?
That's
I like the show Yellow Jacket,
crazy.
And I figured, you know what? Let's check it out.
That's so crazy. Dude, sometimes this show is, like, super slow to the point where I was like, there's no way you would ever, ever like this show.
Well, I mean, during the slow points, I'm also responding to student emails.
Hmm.
There were there was a few points where I had to rewind to rewatch to see if I missed something.
If you've read the book, obviously you know what to expect. If you've never heard of it, you'll see a group of British schoolboys get stranded on a desert island. There's chaos. Them going from being civilized to being savages. It's dark. There's loss of innocence. Sometimes I thought it looked like visually weird because they were using that stupid filter to make the daytime shots look like nighttime shots. And I really hate when productions do that because mm-hmm. like you can always tell that it's like, brother, you got a blue gimmick on your mm-hmm. your what is the lens or whatever. But I enjoyed it. Did you overall like the show?
Overall, I liked it.
That's wild. Yeah,
overall,
I can't believe that.
Yeah. Overall, I liked it, you know, especially because I really didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, I had an idea of what was going to happen, but I didn't know what was going to happen to who and how everything was going to play out. So I thought it was interesting. I thought it was interesting.
It's still like
some of it predictable.
It's I don't know how to say this without cursing. I'm trying to think. It's a messed up story.
Oh, 100%. And unfortunately, it's probably also realistic too if that ever happened.
But like
did you ever watch Yellow Jacket?
No.
Yellow Jackets?
No, I never saw that.
No.
But I would like to know
Lord of the Flies, you may like Yellow Jackets on Netflix.
I would like to know if I wonder if there is a sequel book to Lord of the Flies.
Because like I don't know, but if you like it, Yellow Jackets.
Do they get jail time or
I mean, maybe.
Like, that seems like, I mean, they did some bad things.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
It says there's only an unofficial sequel that follows a second mm-hmm. plane of evacuated girls. So, that's from 2018. So, no, there's no second book.
That's it.
My next shout-out is also a new movie out on Netflix, which is an adaptation of a novel by the same name, Remarkably Bright Creatures. Did you see anything about this? Did you watch it?
I saw it appear. It's on my to-watch list.
It stars Sally Field, Lewis Pullman, Alfred Molina plays voices the octopus, I should say. But Sally Field plays an elderly woman who works the night shift at an aquarium. She forms a bond with a giant octopus who actually solves a mystery. I thought it was a nice, like, heartstring movie. I didn't cry or anything during it, but it was one of those, like, heartstring sort of movies where if you did cry at it, I could understand people crying during it.
No, I kind of don't want to watch it.
It's not like, sad or anything. It's, like, heartwarming.
Okay.
It's nice. I think it's a good movie. So I would recommend it. My last shout out, another film on Netflix, full Netflix this week, Swapped. It's an animated movie. I was watching it and
I think that's number one right now.
To watch it? Or it's a number one on Netflix?
Number one on Netflix.
As I was watching this, I thought it was like a mix of Freaky Friday and Zootopia. And then I saw other people describing it like that. But Michael B. Jordan, Juno Temple, Tracy Morgan, Cedric the Entertainer, and Justina Machado star in it. John Ratzenberger also has a part in it. But to sum it up, two creatures who were enemies end up swapping bodies. It forces them to team up to survive and then restore their home. Some of the movie I thought wasn't good, but overall I thought it was an enjoyable film. I think the details of the backgrounds look absolutely incredible. There's fire in one scene that, like, I would swear was real fire.
Mm-hmm.
There was an unexpected twist, which I think helped add to the movie. So I would say check this out. Obviously, it's a child's movie. It's a kid's film. So maybe your kids would enjoy it more than you as an adult. But, I mean, you as in whoever's listening, not you as in Dave. But I would recommend it. So those are my shout-outs. Now it's time for
our
Mark Out Moment of the Week.
That is right, our Mark Out Moment of the Week. What do you got?
Oh, I don't have anything off the top of my head. What about you?
Well, I will say, during Backlash, since they were in the Tampa area, they aired...
I know mine.
What?
I know mine.
They aired a piece on FCW on the kickoff show, which I think they also then used it on the main card as well. But they used clips from the documentary and then also new interviews as well. So I thought that was really cool. And then we saw Steve Kern and from FCW, big name in FCW. And then we saw Dan Spivey at Backlash. A Waylon Mercy.
Cool.
I was not expecting to see that in a million years.
Yeah,
I would say
that was very cool to see.
If Waylon was in WWE 2K26, I would have that theme song on my jukebox for sure.
I don't remember it.
If I'm not mistaken...
I just remember he was a creepy guy.
If I'm not mistaken, it's a knockoff of the letter from Joe Cocker.
I'd have to go back and listen.
Joe Cocker's cover of the letter.
Man, my mark out moment is Danhausen and the New York Knicks. Mm. That's my... I marked out for all of that, and now Danhausen wants front row tickets with Timothy Chalamet and... Jenner.
Mr.
Kylie Jenner.
Oh, yeah. Did he mention Ben Stiller? I don't know if he did.
No, just the two of those. Yeah, so I definitely marked out for that. It's just hilarious to me. Everything with the New York Knicks and Danhausen right now, it's just hilarious. Very funny.
I saw
funny,
somebody
very,
else
very
try
funny.
To take credit for it. I forget who took credit, but it was not Danhausen related.
Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely Danhausen related.
I also popped that Chessman showed up for an interview for the GM position in AAA. I wasn't expecting to see him there, so I thought that was really cool that we did see him somewhat recently. What?
Who's Chessman?
A legendary lucha wrestler, so.
Oh, nice. Good for him. Way to go, buddy.
So those are the markout moments of the week. That is episode 797. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow us on Twitter at markingout, at BTTG161 on all platforms, at Chris Sweendog, CMSweeney85, David, PTDPT on all platforms, Facebook.com/markingout, YouTube and Instagram are markingout11, ProWrestlingTees.com/markingout, at markingout on TikTok. You could rate, review, subscribe on all platforms. Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, iHeartRadio, YouTube, markingout.com. And we wish you
the
best of luck in your future endeavors. Have a fantastic week.